This is New Media B on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio. I'm Hannah Rodriguez.
And I'm Darrell Smith. We have media news from eight nations today.
From Russia, more laws banning foreign propaganda.
Russia is concerned about a falling birth rate. Could foreign propaganda be to blame? Russia needs babies, so Putin's government has passed a new law banning propaganda that promotes childlessness. What is childless propaganda, according to Putin's government?
From Brazil, let's talk about telenovelas.
More and more viewers are watching soap operas on streaming services in Brazil. How do telenovelas change when they are produced by a foreign company like Netflix instead of a Brazilian TV network like Globo?
From China, are you hungry? Do you like dumplings?
When college students in China get hungry at night, they go in search of dumplings. Thousands of students are cycling through the streets, hunting for dumplings and blocking traffic with their bicycles. These late-night rides are organized on social media. The government is concerned. Is this a protest? Are these mass movements of young people through the streets a political problem?
From Myanmar, what's the state of the internet?
Is there a free internet in Myanmar? Is it a tool of repression or surveillance? How strict is the government control over the internet and the media in Myanmar today? Can an authoritarian government cut the public off from the World Wide Web?
From Canada, the TikTok wars continue.
The Canadian government has told TikTok Canada to shut its office doors. The company can no longer do business in Canada. Why? How dangerous are TikTok's corporate offices? What does this mean for the Canadian fans and all content creators north of the border? Can they still access TikTok?
From India, streams of music are flowing in and out of India.
Music streaming services are growing in popularity in India. Is streaming the future of music in South Asia? What are the big platforms vying for dominance in this market? What happens to the Indian music industry when foreign giants like Spotify take over the market? Are there Indian streaming services competing for listeners and content? Will Indian musicians ride these global giants to a world of new fans around the world?
From Uganda, are TikTokers going to jail in Uganda?
Why are people being arrested for posting on social media in Uganda? Is this a crackdown on political dissent? How important are platforms like TikTok in Uganda politics?
From Singapore, should students have cell phones?
The government of Singapore is worried that young people are becoming addicted to their digital devices. How should the government protect them? How about a ban on smartphones of young people? Could this work? Is this crazy? Do children have the right to access online world through their own digital devices?
All this and more coming up on OWWR Old Westbury Radio, streaming live from the State University of New York College at Old Westbury. Let's get started. John DeLiso has our first global media news story today. John has news about the media and babies in Russia. The government thinks it has a population problem. Russians are having fewer children. Putin's nationalist government is concerned about falling birth rate. In July, Putin's spokesperson Dmitry Peskov called the declining birth rate catastrophic. According to Euronews, Peskov said that having more babies was one of Russia's highest priorities. What could be to blame? What is there to be done? Why don't Russians procreate like they used to? Could it be a cultural problem, a media problem, a problem of foreign influence? Putin's government has a solution, a new law, a new propaganda law. This new law bans propaganda that promotes a childless lifestyle. John, what is this new law targeting and what are its origins?
The law targets what the Russian government states is, quote, propaganda that promotes a childless lifestyle. This includes ads, broadcast media, and online content that either promotes not having children or simply features women who do not have children. In an effort to promote women having children, the Russian government has added family values courses in schools and has been encouraging childbirth in popular state-run media. The law's origins come from a close ally of Putin, Vyacheslav Volodin. The Russian government has passed similar laws in the past prohibiting the promotion of LGBT or other lifestyles as well. This new law is another attempt by the government to silence and censor perspectives that the government believes are less traditional. According to Novaya Gazeta, a Russian state-owned publication, individuals found to be promoting childless lifestyles can be fined as much as $4,000 USD, and companies can be fined up to $50,000 USD. Additionally, foreign citizens who spread the said propaganda can face deportation if they are caught. Not every citizen or organization in Russia falls under this law, however. The Russian Orthodox Church is exempt from the law due to their promotion of monasticism, as reported by the Russian news outlet Medusa.
Is the new law meant to intimidate women into having more children?
Although the law is not explicitly meant to intimidate women into having children, because of the decrease in the number of children being born in the country, the Russian government is banning all types of media that promote a lifestyle where women do not have children. The goal of this law is meant to increase the birth rate in Russia. Volodin wrote on the social media app Telegram, "The decision to have children or not is up to the women, but there should be no propaganda pressuring a woman in her decision to have children. That is what is happening now in the U.S. and Europe." Although lawmakers tout the law as allowing the choice to be up to the woman, they are trying to sway them in a particular direction and trying to suppress more diverse lifestyles that exist in the U.S. and Western Europe.
Is Russia passing this law over fears of Western influence?
Yes, the passing of this law is in a direct response to the influences from what Russia calls, quote, Western lifestyles. According to The Guardian, officials behind the law feel the law is a matter of national security. Government officials feel that the promotion of childless women is a deliberate effort by the West to decrease the population in Russia. Russia has been struggling with a declining birth rate, a high mortality rate, and an aging population. This law is meant to further suppress free speech in the hopes that the demographics of the country will turn around. Russian state media is also taking action to try to promote motherhood on TV shows. The Russian reality TV series titled Mom at 16, formerly titled Pregnant at 16, has been reworked in an effort to promote motherhood. The new series now features young mothers who do not give any criticism towards giving birth or having children. Not every viewer is falling for this change, however. Some viewers have criticized the repetitive storylines of the episodes. One viewer wrote, quote, "Before, Pregnant at 16 was like, think hard, pregnancy is a big responsibility. Now, Mom at 16 is like, have kids as soon as possible."
How does Russian women feel about this law?
Alina Razanova, a woman living in a town north of Moscow, told Reuters, "People want children, but there is no money. That is why people are not having children, not because someone somewhere wrote something." Several Russian women feel that the promotion of childless lifestyles in the media does not play a significant role in the decision for Russian women to have children. Instead, it is due to the poor living standard in Russia. Other women told Reuters that improving the standard of living, particularly in rural towns outside of the big cities, could help increase the birth rate. Other women were angry at this law. They stated that lawmakers were looking to fix the problem of the falling birth rate in the wrong place, according to Euronews. Censoring media is likely to have a negligible effect on the birth rate in Russia and the overall quality of life for its citizens. For New Media Beat, I'm John DeLiso. Back to you, Darrell.
Thanks, John. Let's head south to talk about telenovelas in Brazil with my co-host, Hannah Rodriguez. Brazilian telenovelas are a very profitable business. They are popular in Brazil, and they are also an important media export. Brazil has a huge audience and a growing media economy. Access to Brazilian viewers is the prize, especially the fans of these steamy soap operas. Brazilian telenovelas were produced by Brazilian studios and watched on Brazilian broadcasting networks. But there's a new kid in town who wants a piece of the telenovela action. Netflix wants Brazilians to watch telenovelas on Netflix instead of Brazilian TV. They have started to co-produce some telenovelas for the Brazilian market. Streaming services are challenging the dominant Brazilian TV networks for their audiences. Globo is the biggest name in Brazilian media. How will it react to this change from the streaming service? Hannah Rodriguez is our expert on Brazilian media. Hannah, what streaming services are trying to take over Brazilian soap operas?
A recent report examines the growing influence of streaming platforms like Netflix on Brazil's beloved soap opera landscape. The new series, Pedaço de Mim, which translates to A Piece of Me, raises important questions about the authenticity of Brazil's iconic telenovelas, which TV Globo historically produced. Critics are voicing concerns about how these platforms may impact cultural identity and the future of Brazil's rich television heritage.
Does Netflix create content that reflects Brazilian cultures, cultural differences, or does it risk losing authenticity?
Netflix, the streaming media, has increasingly produced content from around the world appealing to regional audiences. Netflix has invested in a Brazilian series, A Piece of Me, which is a soap opera that caters to Brazilian cultural details. Soap operas like these approach Brazilian telenovela formats, a genre long dominated by TV Global, the country's most popular TV network. According to The Hollywood Insider, Netflix has produced some Brazilian content before, but this is the first time they have bet on a soap opera genre, keeping viewers on the edge of their seats at all times during the series. Hollywood Insider also shares how the show broke an international bubble, gaining international audiences in less than a week.
How is Netflix's Picasso de Meme challenging the dominance of TV Globo in the Brazilian entertainment industry?
Netflix is challenging TV Global's dominance in Brazilian's entertainment industry in several ways, particularly within the world of telenovelas, a genre that has been long the lead of TV Global's programming. TV Globo has associated with the telenovela format for decades. In a previous article published by Deadline, it mentions how TV Globo entered the streaming battlefield, with streaming companies, one of them being Netflix. TV Globo continues to be one of the highest market demand, with shares by original platforms for all series, scoring higher than those who utilize Netflix.
With Brazilian audiences prefer Netflix's version of soap operas, or do they prefer the traditional ones on Globo?
For many Brazilians, TV Globo is known for its telenovelas. The network has been a vital part of Brazilian culture for decades, and their soap operas have shaped public discourse. Older generations who grew up with TV Globo are likely to continue preferring Globo's traditional approach. According to Statista, TV Globo was ranked the highest for most watched TV channels in Brazil. Over time, results may change and both networks can coexist. Netflix may be appealing to younger audiences while TV Globo continues to dominate those who value traditional Brazilian telenovelas. For New Media B, I am Hannah Rodriguez. Back to you, Darrell.
Thank you, Hannah. Do you get hungry late at night and DoorDash out your food with friends? Chinese college students are taking this to an extreme. Thousands are hitting the roads at the same time. Are these midnight dumpling runs with a few thousand of their friends on bicycles just for fun? Or could it be the start of a political movement? The Chinese government is getting nervous, and these young people using social media to take to the streets could have more dumplings on their mind. Stay tuned to find out.
Global Media News, broadcast live, Old Westbury Web Radio.
Samantha Stock is here to talk about the latest mass movement in China. Thousands of students are cycling through the streets at night on the hunt for dumplings. The rides are coordinated on social media. They have become so popular that the government is getting nervous. Could these hordes of hungry young cyclists become a political movement? Is this a form of protest? The Chinese government watches social media closely for signs of political opposition. Should the government shut down the social media accounts that are at the heart of this movement? Samantha, what initially sparked these cycling movements in China?
The majority of individuals taking part in these cycling movements are college students. An article from the BBC states, it began with four university students who cycled for 30 miles from Zhengzhou to Kaifeng in June to try gantengbao, a type of soup dumpling. After they posted their bike ride on social media, it quickly went viral as they spread a message that's important to do spontaneous things with friends. Many in China hopped on this trend and quickly joined in on these cycling movements. Several other components were included in why this movement sparked, such as urbanization, environmental concerns, and health awareness. Because of the huge population in China and cities growing, traffic congestion and pollution became a huge problem, which is why individuals truly enjoyed the idea to ride bicycles for their daily wants and needs. The BBC's article also states, the event is a part of a trend where young Chinese are traveling cheaply at a time when the economy is faltering and job prospects are scarce. At first, China's state media was proud of the individuals of China and felt that these young people were showing their passions. China's government was all for everyone riding their bikes everywhere, as was healthy, but that backfired on them quickly as hundreds and thousands of individuals were forming these movements for silly things such as dumplings, causing chaos on the streets of China.
What platforms in China are individuals using to organize these mass movements?
The cycling movements are being planned through different social media platforms such as Douyin, Weibo, and X. An article by the VOA covers a post on Weibo stating, in a post on Weibo, HH Spiritual Wilderness wrote, "This journey might be absurd, but I'm glad we have the courage to go whenever we feel like it. I dedicate this absurd trip to the memory of my irretrievable 20s. Hashtag Night Ride to Kaifeng." The hashtags Youth is Priceless and Night Ride to Kaifeng quickly became a hashtag used by thousands on Weibo and X. Many students in China shared posts on the platform Douyin about their opinions on these movements. According to an article from CTV News, a student rider posted, "Riding a shared bike from Zhengzhou to Kaifeng for breakfast. Youth is meant for enjoying, going wild and having endless energy." This post received about 250,000 likes while encouraging thousands to these night cycling movements. Online bike rental platforms are now also available for these individuals who are involved in these movements.
What was the effects of these movements on individuals in China?
Well, on the positive side of things, these movements brought communities and individuals of China together, bringing a sense of unity. It was fun to gather around and take a break from the stress of everyday life to just take a ride for something they wanted or something that was trending on social media. But unfortunately, many of the people that went to these movements ended up regretting going at all. One witness told the local outlet Jimu News that his drive was on that route, which usually took 1 hour, took 3. Others that didn't attend these movements were still seeing them all over social media. Those individuals were extremely skeptical over all of the trouble these movements can cause.
How has the government reacted to these night cycling movements?
The government has reacted to these movements in many ways. Schools in China made a mandated curfew and police are shutting down bike lanes. An article from VOA News states, to cool down the situation, many universities in Hainan reportedly imposed strict closed management, with some even implementing full lockdowns, according to social media posts on Weibo and X. Roads were being shut down by police to prevent individuals from traveling. Zhengkai Avenue was a main road that connected the two cities in China together, which was shut down due to these mass movements. The government was also extremely worried and skeptical that these so-called fun movements would turn into bigger movements involving politics and other issues.
Are the platforms that used to form these movements being banned?
No, the platforms being used to form these movements aren't being banned, but they are being monitored more and making sure these movements don't get out of control. As stated in the BBC, it is not surprising to see officials in both cities cracking back because Chinese authorities have always cracked down on large gatherings, which they fear can lead to protests or any form of political expression. For New Media Beat, I'm Samantha Stock. Back to you, Hannah.
Thanks, Samantha. Myanmar used to be called Burma, and it was once a British colony. Today, Myanmar is an independent nation. How much internet freedom is there in Myanmar? What about freedom of the press? Less than half of the population of Myanmar has access to the internet. How open is the internet for the half that does have access? Michaela Rella has been looking into this for New Media Beat. Michaela, what is happening with the internet freedom in Myanmar?
Myanmar is currently tied with China as the country with the worst internet freedom in the world. According to a report from Freedom House, this is a significant shift as China has held the worst ranking alone. In Myanmar, the military junta has taken extreme measures to control internet access, such as blocking independent news sites, enforcing internet shutdowns, and spreading propaganda online. Many people rely on VPNs to bypass restrictions, but even those have become nearly useless. Only one tested VPN worked recently, and it was painfully slow. This makes it incredibly hard for Myanmar's citizens to access the internet. In areas like the Rakhine State, the government justifies these internet shutdowns as security measures, but they are often used to hide information about military actions. The Freedom House report also highlighted that Myanmar is one of the 25 countries that restricted internet access during elections, often to manipulate information or promote false narratives.
What is the government's involvement in this crackdown?
The military's crackdown began intensifying in May of 2024, with authorities randomly searching people's phones for VPN apps. If someone is caught with one, they face fines, and over time, most VPN apps stop working entirely, and popular social media platforms like Facebook, WhatsApp, and Instagram were being blocked. These measures aim to cut off access to social media, which has been critical for protesters to share evidence and of violating human rights. The military is reportedly working with Chinese experts to strengthen its control over the internet, and despite this, there's even some resistance. Activists are trying to create independent internet networks in areas free from military control. The National Unity Government, which considers itself Myanmar's legitimate government, has condemned the military's action as human rights violations and vowed to keep working towards free internet access.
How does the lack of internet freedom affect journalism in Myanmar?
The lack of internet freedom in Myanmar has made journalism an even more dangerous, challenging profession. With the military junta tightly controlling the internet, journalists Internet journalists face severe obstacles in accessing and sharing information. Platforms like Facebook, WhatsApp, and Instagram are being blocked, and VPNs, which could help bypass these restrictions, rarely work anymore. This limits journalists' ability to connect with sources, share their stories internationally, and report on the military's actions. Additionally, internet shutdowns in areas like the Rakhine State are used to hide military operations, making it nearly impossible for journalists to report on abuses or get information out.
How has this affected the safety of journalists?
They face constant threats of violence, imprisonment, or even death. Many have gone into hiding or fled the country altogether. Sadly, 2024 has been the deadliest year for journalists in Myanmar since 2021. Four journalists have been killed so far, including two who were shot during a military raid in August. In another tragic case, Pi Mong Sain, a well-known filmmaker, died in custody after severe torture. Currently, 64 journalists are detained in Myanmar, making it one of the most dangerous countries for the press. In an interview with Myanmar, a journalist, Ko Ong Kyo, states that they kicked me with their boots, they put my head in a plastic bag, and they stepped on my back to suffocate me. Two officers tied my hands behind my back so that I couldn't move, and I almost lost consciousness. They put cigarettes on my face, and they kept saying that reporters are money grubbers who are destroying the country. Despite these risks, many journalists continue reporting, documenting the ongoing conflict and human rights abuses, even at great personal cost. Their courage keeps the world informed about what's happening in Myanmar. For New Media Beat, I am Michaela Rella. Back to you, Hannah.
Thank you, Michaela. We have news from Canada next. The Canadian government has told TikTok to shut its doors, literally. The offices of TikTok in Canada will be closed. What about TikTok itself? Will Canadians still be able to enjoy the profit from TikTok? We will be right back with the answer.
The Canadian government is concerned about national security. Does TikTok threaten the security of Canada? Why? What can be done about this? Canada is taking action. They are prohibiting TikTok from having offices in Canada. What does this accomplish? What was TikTok doing in these offices that threatened the security of Canada? But the biggest question is, what will happen to TikTok itself? Will Canadians still be able to access TikTok online? Frank Wyknett has answers. Frank, how big is TikTok in Canada?
Yeah, you know, it's real popular. TikTok has become a major player in the Canadian social media landscape. Over 10 million Canadians, roughly 1 in 3 people, use TikTok, with significant growth, especially among younger age groups like teens and people in their 20s. TikTok has a penetration rate of 41% in Canada, which means there are 14.8 million registered TikTok users in the country. However, not all of the registered users are active TikTok users. The number of Canadians who are active users is 5.8 million, up from 3.2 million in 2021. The Canadian government has issued a halt to the business with Chinese-owned popular social media app TikTok. This is due to the national security risk of TikTok spreading misinformation and spying on Canadians. A TikTok spokesperson said in a statement that the shutdown of its Canadian offices will mean the loss of hundreds of local jobs. We will challenge this order in court, the spokesperson said. The TikTok platform will remain available for creators to find an audience, explore new interests, and for businesses to thrive. TikTok is widely popular with young people, but its Chinese ownership has raised fears that Beijing could use it to collect data on Western users or push pro-China narratives and misinformation. TikTok is owned by ByteDance, a Chinese company that moved its headquarters to Singapore in 2020.
What good does this do for Canada?
TikTok is not banned in Canada. The Canadian government ordered TikTok's offices in Toronto and Vancouver to close due to security concerns linked to ByteDance's ownership. The decision was made following certain intelligence that emerged following a national security review. This action, however, does not restrict Canadians from using or downloading the app. Canadians can still choose to access TikTok, but should be aware of potential risks. This approach appears to avoid a full ban of the platform while addressing security concerns through policy rather than restriction.
Can Canadians still use the platform?
For most Canadians, the decision to end the social media platform's operation in the country will go largely unnoticed. Although with the social media platform's Canadian operations ending, those workers will be required to leave the country, depending on their status. Shutting down TikTok's Canadian offices and destroying hundreds of well-paying local jobs is not in anyone's best interest, and today's shutdown order will do just that, the company said. The order comes after a lengthy national security review by the federal government into concerns over the popular social media app and its Chinese owner, ByteDance. For New Media Beat, I am Frank Whitenack. Back to you, Darrell.
Thank you, Frank. Let's talk about music in India. Sophia Chitifadopoulos has a report for us about the growth and impact of music streaming services like Spotify in India. Are most Indians streaming music online these days? Which are the most popular platforms? Sophia, what caused the global consumption of Indian music on Spotify to increase by 2,000%?
Spotify focuses on supporting artists locally and is deeply committed to teaching the community how to utilize Spotify for artists fully. This platform enables artists and their management to examine the global consumption of their music.
How are people worldwide finding Indian music on Spotify?
A platform that helps musicians in connecting with fans and understanding how their music is listened to. Spotify has made an investment to teach Indian musicians how to use their service. Bollywood soundtracks and popular regional genres has a dedicated audience worldwide.
Which Indian genres have had the biggest growth on Spotify?
About 49% of Indian respondents to the Global Music Study in 2022 said they streamed modern Bollywood music primarily. Bollywood actually accounted for 5 of the top 10 music streaming categories in India. In addition, 30% of respondents who regularly streamed Indian rap and hip-hop music reported that genres have become more popular among listeners. For New Media Beat, I am Sophia Trifopoulos. Back to you, Darrell.
Thank you, Sophia. Up next, we have a report about TikTok in Uganda. Why are TikTokers being arrested in Uganda? What kind of posts are leading to this government repression?
Let's talk about social media and politics in Uganda with Jada Nunez. Social media users are being arrested in Uganda for posting political content. Jaden, who is being arrested and why? Is there one example of Ugandan TikToker arrested recently that you can tell us about? Who is this Ugandan TikToker?
Emmanuel Nabugadi is a 21-year-old TikTok creator from Uganda who gained popularity for his comedic videos. With around 20,000 followers, his content resonated with a young audience, many of whom appreciated his abilities to blend humor with social and political commentary. However, Emmanuel wasn't just your everyday content creator. His videos often pushed the boundaries of free expression in Uganda. He used his platform to tackle controversial topics, including the actions and leadership of President Yoweri Museveni, who has also been in power for nearly four decades.
What were the charges that led to the arrest of this TikToker?
Emmanuel was charged with hate speech and spreading malicious content. The big issue was a video he made that depicted a mock trial of President Yoweri Museveni, where the president was shown being subjected to public flogging. This video didn't sit well with the government, as it was seen as insulting to the president, who has been in power since 1986.
How long was the Ugandan TikToker sentenced to prison?
He pleaded guilty and received a 32-month prison sentence. The court framed this as a way to deter others from using social media to abuse or criticize public figures, especially in such a bold and mocking way. The court presided over Chief Stella Maris, emphasized that the sentence was intended to serve as a deterrent. According to the judge, this ruling aimed to send a strong message to the public about the consequences of using social media to abuse or mock public figures, especially in ways that are considered disrespectful. The court expressed that Emmanuel's time in prison would teach him and others that such behaviors is unacceptable in Ugandan society.
What type of content was the TikToker creating that led to this arrest?
Emmanuel's content was primarily comedic, often targeting political and societal issues in Uganda. The video that led to his arrest was a bold example of this satire style. It was featured as an exaggerated depiction of the president's ongoing mock trial and for holding the long-serving leader accountable. While such content might be celebrated as creative or thought-provoking in other contexts, in Uganda it was perceived as a crossing line. The authorities viewed the video as a disrespectful and harmful, accusing Emmanuel of using his platform to ridicule the president in a way that undermined his dignity and leadership. This case highlights a much larger issue, the strange balance between creative expression and government censorship in countries where freedom of speech is tightly regulated. For many creators in Uganda and similar contexts, humor and critique are powerful tools for addressing societal challenges and questioning authority. But these tools come with risk. Under laws like Uganda's Computer Misuse Act, content that critiques or mocks those in power can lead to serious legal consequences. For New Media Beat, I'm Jaden Nunez. Back to you, Hannah.
Thank you, Jaden. My co-host, Darrell Smith, has news from Singapore today. He has a story about the government's concern about young people spending too much time on their digital devices. This is a conversation about what some people in Singapore are calling digital addiction. What should the government do to protect children from overexposure to the digital world? Could they ban smartphones for children? Darrell, what is the age range that the government of Singapore is worried about?
So the age range that the government of Singapore is worried about is nearly half of Singapore youth, mainly between the ages of 13 and 21, have already developed problematic cell phone usage. It's been reported that even more kids, if not having developed these problems already, are spending exuberant amounts of time on their phone and are suddenly going to develop these problems in the future. Counselors and social workers in Singapore also say that many youngsters are dealing with various forms of digital addiction, ranging from the excessive use of social media and the internet to the countless hours spent on gaming and pornography. As technology becomes more embedded in our daily lives, concerns about the potential impact on mental health and well-being are growing. The country reports that they typically treat individuals age 13 and older for issues relating to the digital devices usage or addiction, as internet addiction is categorized under a borderline spectrum of behavioral addictions in its data. In its data of the issue, Institute of Mental Health in Singapore, or the IMH, does not have a set figure of how many cases they deal with this daily.
How has the rise in smartphone usage and social media popularity contributed to cell phone addiction among Singapore's youth?
Before we even get to how social has affected them, the use of internet period and the freedom that it comes with it, with these young kids still having undeveloped minds, it could be dangerous for kids because now unsupervised, they can do anything. So now we're throwing social media into the mix and now it being seen as a glory app or something that it's like, oh, if you don't have it, you're nothing. These kids' lives are being ruined by these things.
What steps has the Singaporean government or local organization taken to address and mitigate the growing concerns of cell phone addiction among its citizens?
The Touch Media Group and the Institute of Mental Health in Singapore say that parents should attribute a similar amount of importance to preparing their child for the first day of school as they would prepare them for their first device.
What could parents do to help their kids with these issues?
So as the IMH has stated, most parents have become more anxious about their children's screen time daily when issues start to creep up down the road, when signs start to show. So what they say that parents should do is they should set up no phone zones in the home or set up no phone times like during mealtime or dinner time. For New Media Beat, I'm Darrell Smith. Back to you, Hannah.
Thank you, Darrell. That's all for this week. Thanks for listening to New Media Beat. Thanks to our co-producers, Jaden Nunez and Jonavi Serpathy. Gabrielle Gambuza engineered the show today. My co-host is Darrell Smith. Thanks, Darrell.
Thanks, Hannah. Today we heard reports from John DeLiso, Jaden Nunez, Michaela Rella, Hannah Rodriguez, me, Darrell Smith, Samantha Stock, Sophia Chudafidopoulos, and Frank Whitenett.
New Media Beat is brought to you by OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio and the Media and Communications Department here at the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest post on newmediabeat.org, where you can listen to our webcast and even subscribe to our podcast feed.
Stay tuned for more great programming coming up next on OWWR Old Westbury Web Radio.